We've all seen it. The Department of War is operating in a world that's changing faster than ever. That's why so many guests on my show talk about the importance of continued innovation and technology in the military. But here's the problem. Working with the Department of War can be complex. For many companies, the process isn't always transparent. It's hard to know who the right stakeholders are, where the decisions are made, or how funding actually moves. Even when you get the right conversation started, you often hear the same responses. We like the technology, but funding is already allocated. Or check back next fiscal year. That leaves a lot of capable teams with strong products, but no clear path forward. That's where my friends at SBIR Advisors come in. They've built a team of over 60 former acquisition officers who spent their careers inside that black box. They help you find the right buyers in the Department of War, find the money, and write winning proposals so you can get on the right contract and fast. Since 2020, they've helped small businesses like yours win over $600 million in government contracts. And they're a 100% veteran team dedicated to one thing, getting the best technology into the hands of the people who need it the most, the warfighters. If you're serious about selling to the Department of War, go to SBIRAdvisors.com. That's SBIRAdvisors.com. And if you mention my name, you'll get the first month free.
Jetzt nur du, dein Podcast und eine leckere Auszeit. Ab zu Aldi Nord. Für 1,99 Euro machst du es dir instant lecker. Mm. Und für 59 Cent findest du dein neues Lieblingsdessert. Bei Aldi Nord findest du immer das Passende. Klingt gut? Dann probier das Asia Green Garden Udon Nudel Bowl Fertiggericht. Ab 249 Gramm für nur 1,99 Euro. Oder Milsani Sahne Kefir. 250 Gramm für nur 59 Cent. Das ist Gutes für alle zum Aldi-Preis. Jetzt in deiner Filiale. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
Joe Lonsdale, welcome back, man.
Thanks, Sean.
It's been a minute.
It's good to be here.
Lots of shit going down.
I love the new place.
Thank you. I've been excited to show it to you.
It's awesome. It's making me thirsty for a drink, but it's too early.
Well, hey, we got plenty to dive into if you change your mind.
All right. Maybe we'll grab a cigar later and shoot some stuff. Yeah, that'd be
cool.
Fun.
Yeah. We'll blow some shit up after this.
I love it.
But, well, man, you texted me, shit, it feels like maybe 6 months ago, but we were talking about, you had texted me an article or a tweet or something about Christians being persecuted in Nigeria.
Oh, yeah.
And you, I believe, invested in a company down there to kind of combat that a little bit. So I was like, hey, come on.
A lot of stuff to go over. I mean, listen, I think there's like two things we all have to battle for great Americans, and we believe in Western civilization. One is we got to stop the commies, and two is we got to stop the radical Islamists. I think those are forces of evil all around the world.
Yeah,
you know, and it doesn't mean whatever moderate left. I don't mind. I disagree with them. They're not evil. Maybe there's some moderate Muslims I think are good people I work with, but these extremists, man. And by the way, even if we solve everything in the Middle East, let's just pretend everything goes perfectly and we solve so many of the problems. They're obviously not going to solve it all. But let's say you solve a bunch of it, Africa is going to be a battleground for this nonsense for sure for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
And man, it is just nasty. Like, you see what they do to the Christians there? They'll take 70 of them into a church and they'll slaughter them in the church and they'll rape and they'll pillage and they'll kidnap schoolgirls. And it's just on and on and on. Thousands being murdered. Very little pushback. Let's stop these bad guys.
It's fucking crazy, man. I pulled some stats up while you're down here getting pictures. And it said 388 million persecuted Christians worldwide, 4,849 murdered for their faith, that's in 2026, 72%. 72% of those murders were in Nigeria alone. 163 worshipers abducted from two churches in January of 2026. Shit is definitely popping off there. 8VC led $11.8 million investment in Terra Industries. What is Terra Industries?
Yeah, and these guys have raised tens of millions more since I backed them, because once we back them, always other people like to get involved. Listen, it's two young, talented Nigerian men. One of them was a physics Olympiad. One of them had already built another company in his early 20s that was successful. and they're building a defense prime for Africa. And obviously, you know, after Palantir, I built a couple other big defense companies here. I know this space.
A few.
Just a few. I appreciate you interviewing them. There's some great men. I want them to get credit, not me. I try to help them out. And, you know, it's like Africa needs stuff too, and it's going to partner with a bunch of our stuff. And listen, these are really talented young men. They were already just trying to get going on it. We thought they deserved some resources and some help. And there's some partnership. Like, I think it's good for us to be partners with the best and the brightest there who are on the side of the good guys.
So how did this pop on your radar?
You know, we see a lot of things going on. I have some old friends. You know, one of my interns built a couple of big companies in Nigeria, who's from actually a big Christian family there, who's a prominent guy, really, really good guy. We have others who kind of track and try to talk to the physics Olympiad winners around the world and see what they're doing. So there's lots of different ways that you kind of see this from a couple of different sources. You see it's real, and then you send people over and get engaged, you know?
With Terra, did you found it? Did you co-found it?
This one, we were the first big institutional investor. So we took a big minority stake in the company early. I think it was about a $40 million valuation. We put, you know, we bought a quarter of the company, or give or take. And then it since has raised, you know, 20, 30 million more, closed some really big contracts. And the idea is, like, you know, we know a lot about this industry. Let's help them. Let's help them scale it up around Africa. I have multiple spots, multiple governments they're working with. There's certain things they're going to be the best at. There's certain things America has companies that are going to be the best at. Let's make sure we partner and help them. So if they're building, for example, remote controlled cars that are already working, which they are, if they want to make those things autonomous, maybe you partner with someone like Overland, right? There's also all sorts of ways you can help them with our stuff as well.
Where are they based out of?
They're based out of a city, a suburb of Lagos in Nigeria to start with, but then they also have stuff they're doing around East Africa as well. Now they're doing multiple places where they're manufacturing.
So what else are they doing, and how does this tie into persecution of Christians?
Well, I mean, you have to be able to monitor things going on. You got to build sentry towers. You got to build sentry drones. You got to be able to build defense drones. You got to be able to build, you know, cars and other things that can drive around autonomously and watch and have guns on them. So you basically need to be able to arm these people cheaply and affordably with a way to see when the bad guys are coming, and a way to fight back, and a way to deter the bad guys. And it's not just that, it's infrastructure as well that's being attacked by these crazy people. You got to defend for the country. You got to be able to defend all sorts of different kind of assets over there. But you want stuff that can help these innocent places defend themselves right now. They don't have any advanced modern military, you know?
No, I'm aware. So do you have a little more context of what's going on the ground there? Why are they persecuting Christians? Who's defending them?
Well, this ties into the war that we're fighting right now in the Middle East. Let's be clear, right? This ties very closely into it. Is you have these basically crazy forces around the world that are funding Islamic jihadi terror, right? And that is unfortunately like how the extreme Islamists view things, is that it's their job for them to dominate, and for everyone who's not Muslim to have to basically, like, you know, either, you know, submit or convert or pay a tax and have Muslim win. And so Nigeria is a country in Africa that's close to 50-50, right? It's slightly more Muslims than Christians. So it's a very obvious, very big target for these same jihadis in Iran who are sending out money to do bad things. It's the same types of groups, the Muslim Brotherhood. That's, you know, same ones that run CARE in the US and try to pretend that they're nice guys when they're not. Those are the same types of people who will go after this and say, this is a chance for us to assert our Islamist dominance. And so it's a very big target to make sure the Christians lose and the Muslims win for them in that country.
What are they doing to the Christians over there?
They're intimidating them. They're trying to scare them into converting. They're trying to kill them when they're in there. They're trying to take their women. They're trying to do basically horrible things, you know?
I mean, in Syria, I think they were crucifying them.
It's hard for me to remember if that was
Nigeria.
It's all over. There's all over the Middle East. They've done this. I mean, listen, Lebanon, let's stepping back for a second. Lebanon was a very safe Christian dominated country, right? Like, this is like Lebanon was one of the success stories still for Christians in the Middle East. It was a relatively peaceful place overall. The constitution built in where it was shared power between kind of moderate, you know, Sunnis and Maronites and others. And what happened with Iran in the 80s, when they started just to fund all of this kind of nonsense, is they funded Hezbollah, and they went in and they basically destroyed Lebanon as a safe place for people to live. And they made it a horrible, broken country, and they tortured people and they killed people there. They actually not only tortured the people there, we had a CIA chief who was there in the 80s under Reagan, and they caught him and they kept him alive for months, skinning him alive, torturing him in every possible way to get his information. And so people say Trump's like convinced to do this recently. Trump saw that happen then. By the way, you see that happen to the CIA chief of America, tortured for months to get all the information. Like, you want to let those guys get away with that? I wouldn't want to let those guys get away with that.
When did this happen?
This is the 80s under Reagan.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But this is like, so this is why it's such a big deal right now. What's happening is because for the first time, like, that was one of the things that fell when Iran first started projecting its power after taking over, right, in the late 70s when the crazies came in and, mm-hmm. and slaughtered people and tortured people and took over and started kind of spreading their nastiness. They spread it to Africa, of course, and they have lots of things there. But Lebanon was like the first really kind of like pretty healthy Christian, like part modern country to fall to this nonsense. And we may be within a month or two of actually cleaning out Hezbollah and taking it back, which is awesome.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So let me give you an introduction here real quick before we get into all the geopolitical shit that's going on in the world. So Joe Lonsdale, co-founder of Palantir Technologies, after Palantir founded Adepar, invested or co-founded multiple U.S. unicorns, billion-dollar companies, Epirus, Palantir, Anduril, Illumio, Synthego, Saronic, Yugabyte, Asana, co-founding Cicero, organizing dedicated to advancing educational opportunities and policy to transform lives and societies. Co-founder and managing partner of 8VC, venture capital firm that pushes for policies that encourage innovation. Advisor to leading political figures, advocates for a future where technology and policy work hand in hand solve our biggest challenges. Welcome back.
Thank you, Sean.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, we got a Patreon. They're the reason I get to sit with you here today. And so they get the opportunity to ask every single guest a question. And this is from Tim. It is being reported that the current data center infrastructure investment, roughly $650 billion, will last only 3 years, after which GPUs can be severely degraded and will need to be replaced. Traditional infrastructure investments like roads, railroads, and high voltage, which can last for 30 to 50 years with less of an investment. Is this level of maintenance for data centers feasible?
I don't think they're totally useless after 3 years. I think the situation, though, is that there's so much better stuff based on the new technology that you're going to want some new stuff for certain workflows. And listen, that this is the most dynamic sector now of the U.S. economy. There's trillions of dollars going into it. There are so many smart people from around the world figuring out what new chip designs, what new data center designs, how do you use AI to do every part of it better? How do you do the energy better? I'm getting pitches left and right, and people, you know, top guys around Elon, top guys around Jensen, all these top guys spending so much money on this. I'm not worried they're not going to figure it out. I think it's a great space that we are spending trillions of dollars. It's going to drive America to the future. I'm super interested to talk about AI, but these guys are figuring out the infrastructure. It's going the right way.
Well, how are they going to power all this stuff?
I mean, listen, like, I have friends who are like just getting the next natural gas turbines that were supposed to go to Turkey, and they're rerouting them and spending a bunch of money to put them in Texas, right? And doing it that way. We have all sorts of LNG massively coming online. We have all sorts of new solar. We have, you know, billions of dollars of batteries coming online to make solar work better. I think it's all of the above. I was with Joe Kraft yesterday when we had a political figure over who owns a bunch of coal. I mean, listen, the solution is all of the above, right? The solution is every possible energy you can get. It's going to keep energy prices, you know, healthy for a while, but it's also going to create and is creating massive investments into energy to make it work, which you look at China, by the way. China has now about, I think, three times the power we have. Starting with 1999, we were about equal. We were way ahead of them, obviously, in the 80s. I think that's one advantage they have, is they've put more of their kind of resources into infrastructure. We're going to need to put more resources into infrastructure. I think a lot of the how well our working class does is going to be tied in part to how much we can build more cheap energy for everyone and bring prices down for everyone. So this is going to be a big fight.
Do you know where we're at with the nuclear stuff?
There's so many great companies going as fast as they can now.
There's a shit ton of good companies.
The NRC.
Isaiah Taylor's got Valor. What is it? Valor.
Valor, yeah.
JU just started that company, LIS. Laser Enriched Uranium.
Commonwealth Fusion's building their first fusion plants. They're spending billions of dollars on it, and it's very, very, you know, credible now how that fusion part's getting better. The late 2030s is going to be huge. The solar is getting more efficient. There's massive new plants there with batteries. Zach Dell's putting in billions of dollars of batteries in Texas Grid to make it work better and make alternatives there work better. I think, you know, coal itself's getting more efficient, even though we're not supposed to talk about it. Like, I think everyone's doing everything.
I can't believe we're fucking talking about coal.
I mean, well, I just was with Joe last night, this guy who's doing some vegetables. But like, I think every level is good. Now listen, fusion and fission, really fission has been held back by stupid regulation and kind of got pushed 30, 40 years behind where it would be. I think we're going to catch up. We're going to do a massive amount of it. I think all of this stuff is good.
You think policy's coming around for nuclear?
It really is. It really is. Like, even like the Texas legislature is putting in like bonuses if someone gets a small, you know, plant done there. The NRC is now staffed by people who are no longer completely, I think we've for the first time in 40 years started approving, maybe 50 years, by the way, I think we started approving new designs again. It's we're actually turning it back on. It's like we went through this crazy deindustrialization period in the U.S. from 1971 to like 2023 or whatever, and something about like Trump revolution, but also something about AI and how AI could be used to unlock productivity growth. It's like we're back. Like America is now growing again. We're now fixing things again. This is an optimistic time. Our enemies should all be really scared. Like, we are clearly going to be dominant. This is now the American century again if we keep it up.
Hope you're right, man. Lots of shit going on in the world right now.
Oh, yeah.
Iran, China's making moves on Taiwan. Russia, Ukraine's still going up. We purged Maduro out. Cuba's in a fucking crisis.
I love it. I love it. It's like leadership, man. Come on. The bad guys are on the run.
Where do you want to start?
I mean, the Americas, let's just say... I mean, I love what we did with Venezuela. This is awesome. This guy is clearly a criminal. And here's what people don't get. This is really important. When you have a place like Venezuela that gets taken over by these like cartels and these socialists and communists and just bad influences, it's lots of problems for the U.S. First of all, they're like allying with our adversaries. They're working with Hezbollah and others to create weapons with them. They're allying with China for energy. They're helping Russia. But then second of all, they're spreading. It's like a virus. They're spreading their ideology all around the rest of Latin America, all around the rest of the world. And so like when you go, I was with the conservative president of Colombia, El Duque, who was the guy before this guy. And there were protesters coming into his country, and they were coming from Chile, where they had just succeeded and just like worked to temporarily turn Chile left. Thank goodness we turned it back, but they turned it very left. And they were funded by Venezuela. They were funded. They had Cuban people involved, and they had Russian technology. It's like these guys, fuckers in Russia, still think it's the Soviet Union or something, and they're still causing messes around the world. And you know why? Because if they succeed and they make these things go hard left, like it's like having bad guys in charge. Who the bad guy's going to partner with and like plunder with? They're going to work with the other bad guys.
Mm-hmm. I've got to tell you, this is one of those things I didn't realize how much I needed until I actually started using it. Every device I got needs a different cord. Phone, headphones, watch, it's a mess, especially when you're traveling. But Ridge, they fixed it. Their 5-in-1 travel power bank has everything built in, so you're not carrying a bunch of cables around anymore. You've got MagSafe wireless charging, Apple Watch charger, Lightning USB-C, all in one device. I've been using it and it just simplifies everything. I'm not digging through a bag or fighting for outlets anymore. It's got 20 watts of power, charges your phone fast, and with 10,000 milliamp hours, you're getting multiple full charges out of it. And like everything Ridge makes, it's solid. It's built to last and it actually looks pretty good too. Not like those cheap airport chargers. One thing to pack, 5 ways to power. You can find Ridge's power bank at Best Buy, or our listeners can get 10% off at ridge.com by using code SRS at checkout. Just head to ridge.com and use code SRS, and that's it. You're all set. After you purchase, they'll ask where you heard about them. Please be kind, support our show, and just tell them we sent you. I'm pretty simple when it comes to gear. I like things that just work. No distractions, no extra thought. Things that just do what they're supposed to do. That's exactly why I like Sheath. Most underwear, you're adjusting all day, especially if you're moving around or training. It's just one more thing pulling your focus. Sheath fixes that. They've got a true dual pouch design that keeps everything separated, so you're not dealing with sticking, chafing, or constantly readjusting. You put them on and you're done. The material is awesome, super soft, breathable, lightweight,
feels high quality and holds up whether I'm working, traveling, or in the gym. And what I really respect is the company is veteran-owned and was designed by an active-duty soldier. This was built for long days, heat, movement, real conditions, not just comfort. For me, that's why it's my go-to. It removes a distraction and lets me stay focused. Feel it to believe it. Go to sheath.com/SRS and use code SRS for 20% off. And Sheath even offers a first pair guarantee. So if it's not for you, you get your money back. But honestly, once you try these, there's no going back. That's sheath.com/SRS and use code SRS for 20% off. Sheath, the underwear of legends. Thanks to Sheath for sponsoring this episode.
So it really, and I know some people are like, oh, it's too simple. You're in preschool. No, it really is. There's like the good guys and the bad guys, and you want the bad guys to lose. You don't want the far left authoritarian rapists, like crazy people to take over. And so Trump actually using a little bit of our authority, a little bit of our strength, a little bit of our, frankly, total dominance, and going in and saying, no, we're not going to allow a crazy bad guy spreading evil to be in, spreading crime, to be in charge of this place, 3-hour flight from the South Coast. Thank goodness. Thank goodness there's a man in charge.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Mexico is, we've been talking about Mexico for nonstop.
It's complicated, yeah.
Why haven't we done anything there?
Yeah, well, I think we have done a little bit there. I would have done a lot more there. You know, my wife actually researched a lot of the rules for Texas, what we could do. And we helped sponsor something that got the governor to declare an invasion back when Biden was president. He's a good guy, but he didn't end up acting more than declaring the invasion. If it was me and I was governor, I probably would have bombed a few fentanyl plants, you know?
Dude, that's our border.
Yeah. If you put a fentanyl plant next to my border, I'd blow it up. These guys are scared of Trump right now. He's definitely taking some strong actions. You know, I think we saw, was it Puerto Vallarta where they attacked the Costco in the airport after their leader got killed? I think there's some joint operations right now to put a lot of pressure on the cartels. I think the cartels are laying much lower. A lot of the border crossings were cartels. If you look at the amount under Biden, it was insane. I think we cut it off under this administration pretty dramatically. So the cartel funding has gone way down because they're not getting paid to get people across the border right now. And I think they're very scared of the fentanyl stuff. And so that right now we're very busy, but we are doing a lot there. I think there's a lot more we could do there to go after the cartels. And that's, you know, I bet we'll see that.
Yeah. I know there's a lot more we could be doing. One thing that, I've just been diving it because we didn't hear anything about Venezuela for, you know, forever. And then all of a sudden it popped and fucking yanking him out.
I love it.
And, you know, but I've just been curious, like, why are we going there instead of Mexico? I mean, you're talking about a 3-hour flight from Venezuela to the U.S. Mexico's right at our border. Have you heard about the answer that I keep getting is voting fraud. The voting fraud,
I've heard a lot of rumors about that, and I'd believe that there was something they were involved with. I think the voting fraud could have been a part of it. But listen, these guys.
Do you understand? I mean, I haven't met anybody that can articulate how the voting fraud is happening through the Smartmatic machines that are affiliated with Venezuela.
I understand in theory how they could have done something illegal with them and been involved. And I think having a state actor helping makes it a lot easier to create a lot of false records and to do a lot of sketchy work. Whether that was true or not, I have to be honest, I don't know enough to know. I could definitely see it being true. I guess the thing I'd say, Sean, is that there's enough other reasons why Venezuela is something where we could act right away, where we could stop them from doing more deals with the Chinese. The Chinese delegation was there when we did it. Like, there was a big deals going down with our adversaries right off our coast. And we had caught them sponsoring lots of horrible things around the Americas and working with a lot of other kind of bad forces. So I think the Venezuela-Cuba access then helps us put pressure on Mexico to take more aggressive action there and makes it easier for us to be successful because it turns off a lot of the funding for a lot of the worst elements. So
what's going on in Cuba? You familiar with that?
Yeah, we had all those funny, crazy far-left idiots there the last couple of weeks. I don't know if you saw that at all. It's like these people of us just hate America and hate the West so much. So like, it's just crazy who go there and try to pump it up. Such a failed country. It's been about a year of like real extreme problems and real extreme suffering there. It's not clear to me like what the exact triggers going to be, but these people are the regime is in huge amount of trouble.
I mean, their infrastructure is falling apart right now, correct?
It has been for decades, but it's gotten really, really bad. I mean, they're just so desperately poor, and everyone's like, oh, like the far left's like, oh, it's because you blocked them off. They trade with the rest of the world, by the way. They just don't have property rights, and they don't have the incentive for anyone to invest. And, you know, I think a lot of smart people, of course, have fled, because why would you want to live in a place where people are making $20 a day and everyone's forced to prostitute themselves? And if you do work really hard, you just get the attention of the government guys who steal it from you, right? This, by the way, this is like human history for 10,000 years. Mm-hmm. Is anyone who works really hard and builds something, if he can't defend it, it just gets taken away by the thugs in charge.
Sounds like California.
But that's why we were so miserably poor as a species for thousands and thousands of years. There were no property rights. Like the Enlightenment in the West is this really important thing we forget to teach kids about. Like the Enlightenment that like led to understanding of these things, led to understanding of why natural rights was so important. And then the battles to get those natural rights and to put, you know, John Locke, like life, liberty, and property in place. Like that is core to everything. That's why we have all the nice things we have. And that Cuba doesn't have that, right? So it's a miserable place. And if we can get it back in the right direction, that'd be so good for them and for the world. And I think Secretary Rubio really passionate about this, and I think he's pretty clear he has a plan. And I think after Venezuela, this is clearly it's going to be something that we work on. I don't know how we do it, but I think it's a great thing to do in the next year.
Interesting. Iran.
Yeah,
I'm against this.
You're against doing anything in Iran.
I am.
I want to talk to you about this. So let's do the counterfactual. So you agree the U.S. Navy was created to fight back against jihadists in the 1780s. Like they've been a problem for 200 years, right? First of all.
Okay.
So I mean, the reason we created the U.S. Navy was because basically, like you had Islamic forces around the Mediterranean that had been kidnapping. Originally, you know, tens of millions of Europeans, basically. There were millions of European women who were sex slaves to these people over several hundred years. This had been a thing they'd always done since the foundation of Islam. It's in the Quran. You're allowed to do it to non-Muslim women. And when our ambassador goes and says, listen, we're a new independent country. We're not fighting with you. We have nothing to do with this. We're just having trading ships there. Why are you taking our sailors? Like, we have nothing to do with you. By the way, there's no Israel. There's none of that fucking shit. And you know what they say? They say, it's our right as a superior group. We're the Muslims, and we're going to take them. That's our right because you're not Muslim, and so we have a right to take you and to take what we want. And that is what our holy book tells us. Like this is this conversation. So you look at any American founder, the first 30, 40 years of this country, they're like, these guys are fucking crazy. It's a terrible thing. Mm-hmm. And we actually literally created the Navy, and we went and we fought back and we fucking bombed their cities. We attacked their cities. We went after the Barbary pirates. We went after the core empires there that were doing this to us. We beat the shit out of them. And it was the right thing to do because they were stealing thousands of our soldiers or thousands of our sailors. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't let them get away with that, right? So first of all, it was right to do that. I'd assume you'd say based on what I said, like 200 years ago, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And so... So listen today what it is. So you get this, you get a relatively modern country, like conquered and raped by this crazy theocracy, same exact type of guys as 200 years ago. These are guys that are taking what they want, raping, killing. I'm sure you've seen.
Joe, you don't have to tell me about how
you agree
bad
they're evil.
Iranians
you agree they're evil. Okay. So I mean, you agree they're evil.
They've killed more of my fucking friends than probably anybody else.
Okay, so give that.
They
give
fucking
that.
Hung dudes off bridges.
They're spreading their money to Venezuela. We caught them building things there. We caught them building things all around Africa. Obviously, they destroyed the Christian country of Lebanon. They're doing all sorts of other bad stuff. Now we know, thanks to this war, by the way, we now know they were lying. They did have missiles they were building. They could go 4,000 kilometers. So they're going to have basically crazy jihadis. We know they're building nukes at this point. They had 11 bombs they were going to have. That was their starting point in their negotiations. We have materials for 11 bombs. So Jared and Witkoff are sitting there. This administration is sitting there being told, we have 11 bombs you can't get rid of. That's where we are. And now we now know that they could hold all of Europe hostage, and they're obviously working to make that go to the U.S. They obviously could go to the Eurasia. So we now know they could hold. Did you really want – so you do nothing for 10, 20 years. You have like tons of nukes. You have missiles that can go to every Western city, and you have crazy jihadis who don't care if they die in battle as long as they can destroy their Death to America pledge because they're so obsessed with it. This is not this Death to America existed long before any of this stuff in the modern age in Israel. So that's the counterfactual. 20 years from now, our kids, our children, mm-hmm. are in a world where it's the nuclear armed guys with crazy missiles, with whatever else AI and China stuff they have that they've now used. By the way, we're way ahead of them right now in AI, way fucking ahead of them in AI. We are not necessarily going to be way ahead of them in 20 years. I don't know where we're going to be. But right now, there's a giant gap. Like, we are way ahead of them. So it's like we can move now when we're way ahead and they can hurt us this much. Or we could wait till God knows what happens when there are nuclear armed jihadis who can threaten anywhere in the West. I mean, the thing is, I 100% agree. It's like risky and dangerous and tough to act. It's very scary. I think it's much scarier just to let it go for 10, 20 years with these fuckers. That's my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, I've not been presented with any proof that they have those type of weapons. And I haven't even seen proof that the whatever the missile is that they launched is from them.
You think there's a false flag launch from Iran?
I have no fucking idea. I did not say that.
No, I
just said there hasn't been any proof. And it's getting hard. It's just getting hard to believe the administration. I mean, there's been a lot of bait and switches that have happened within a lot of different areas. I mean, the for example, the interview I throughout yesterday was about glyphosate and all the cancer it's causing. And you know that, I mean, you're familiar with the MAHA movement. It was, you know, make America healthy again. And
yeah,
we're going to get rid of all this shit. And then they just fucking declared a national security concern for if we don't give the pesticide companies immunity, glyphosate. And they called it a national security concern. Well, for example, Iowa has the most cancer cases out of every state in the fucking USA. You know who uses the most glyphosate?
Yeah, obviously
Iowa.
The corn there in Iowa.
618,000 people died of cancer last year in the US. Why are we giving them immunity? Anyways, yeah, that's just one example.
Yeah, no, listen, I think that's a particular one where I think there should be more open debate from the administration on it and discussion of it. I think I know Brooke Rollins for a long time in the policy world. I think she's a really smart lady. She did some really impressive things fighting the left in Texas when she ran TPPF. She's now the agriculture secretary. That's her call. I think it'd be great to, you should get her on the show. I can invite her. I can text her if you want. Like, let's think what she says. You know? No, I'm serious.
Get her up.
I'm serious. Why not? Like, I don't know. I feel like she'd have a lot of respect for a lot of things you do.
Cool.
And a lot of things you've done in your service. So I think that's a fair debate. I'm not an expert on that one, but I think we should be debating it openly. And I'd love to hear the smartest people on both sides. And I think if they're just ignoring it when so many people believe as you do, that's not appropriate. So let's engage on it. That'd be what I'd say.
I didn't mean to dive into that.
So no, that's fair. That's fair. But you're saying you don't trust. You're saying you don't trust someone.
I don't trust
from
when I saw the release of the Epstein files, and how that got butchered, and how it continues to get butchered. That shit really pissed me off, man. And then
I never met the guy. I agree, he was a slimeball who seemed to know everyone because he was really good at networking and meeting people and tricking them to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think everyone involved was like messing with kids. Like,
I don't either.
Yeah, right. So a lot of people just like.
But I think it's pretty obvious that some people involved were messing.
I think some people were very, at the very least, a lot of people were messing with 21 and 22 year old girls. And I think some of them might've been underage. And I don't know, cause I never met the guy, and he was a bad guy, but these other people, I just don't know. But I'm curious, like what should they do on it to rebuild trust there? Actually, that's one I don't really follow at all.
What should they do to rebuild trust?
Yeah. Yeah. How do
be
we
transparent? I think that's all anybody wants is just transparency. And they want to see, you know, I mean, we heard it over and over again. We're going to go after these people. We haven't seen, we've heard
so much about voting fraud.
We haven't heard fuck all about
that. I agree. Why is the DOJ right now and the FBI are both really hurting the reputation of this administration because they're not going after and getting enough arrests right now and getting enough cases. I think that is 100% true. I was talking to our friends there who are focused on fraud. There's a ton of fraud we're helping them find. I'm obsessed with this issue. I think there's way more fraud in this country than anyone realizes. We have to start making more charges and arrests. And it's like way too slow. Like someone, and I don't know, they can't find the right people to run it. It's embarrassing. That part pisses me off.
Yeah. So anyways, it's just all these things that have happened that I've lost a lot of trust.
You shouldn't trust the bad guys running Iran either, though. You also agree.
I don't trust the bad guys running Iran. And I don't necessarily think I would be against the war in Iran.
If they
presented it to me in a different way. But, you know, like all the stuff you're saying, yes, it's true. Yes, it's my fucking friends that died over there. Yeah. I saw it. they're my friends. You know, yeah. I don't want to send my fucking kid back over there to die.
Yep.
You know, for any of this shit.
Yeah.
I mean, we spent over 20 fucking years.
Yeah. Well, I think the way Afghanistan was run was just a travesty. We wasted trillions of dollars and everyone should be pissed off about it. And so I think that has created distrust that is fair to exist. There should be distrust after we wasted all his lives and all his money with not real clear aims. So mm-hmm. I 100% agree with that perspective. I have some mentors who ran British intelligence 20, 30 years ago. And I know these guys still pretty well because they're always with Palantir. We got to know a bunch of them. They thought we were kind of like a Aboriginal species they're visiting in Silicon Valley versus like MI6, right? These guys are cool. And you know, a couple of them have told me that they thought that a lot of the stuff that got us to go into Iraq, because we kind of already wanted to go into Iraq, obviously, but they thought some of the stuff, some of the evidence, like including from Chalabi, who was an Iranian spy, like purposely came from Iran, even at that time. And what's interesting is even at that time, in my understanding, I went back and looked at it, like a lot of the top voices out of like our ally in Israel were saying Iran's the big problem, not Iraq. So a lot of people are saying, oh, we fought Iraq for Israel. I don't think that's the case. I think in that particular instance, like Iran was very clever in getting us to focus more on Iraq. And even back then, I think they were the bad guys. So
interesting.
For what it's worth, that's that, you know, I think they're clearly the worst and I'm very happy a lot of them are dead. But I 100% understand where you're coming from, not wanting to trust and not wanting to put more people over there.
Do you think we're fighting Iran for our own benefit, or do you think we're fighting Iran for Israel's benefit?
Oh, I think it's definitely our own benefit. I think this is, by the way, China is like freaking pissed. You know, China sent several billion dollars of stuff with cargo planes to Iran that they were in the process of setting up to help defend them. This is their proxy ally. Like their allies are Russia and Iran. They want Iran to exist and be able to cause trouble to like distract us and force us to split our forces if we ever have to deal with anything they might want to do. This is like a chess game where they're trying to build this ally and we just smash their ally. And by the way, you know who the strongest military in the world is right now? It's us. And because we're basically deploying all this new technology and all this new AI in ways that no one else is, we're learning how to make interceptors way cheaper. We're learning how to just coordinate all these things we never would have learned before. China has no idea how to do this stuff. Like, I'm not saying you want to fight wars to get better, but this makes us so much stronger to smash their proxy ally, to smash their stuff, and to learn how to use all this technology. Like, this makes them a lot harder to challenge us for the next.
You want to talk about how AI's,
what
we're using over there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from what I can say, and listen, I don't have my full clearances at this point anymore either, but I have a lot of friends on both sides, and you know, we developed a lot of the targeting stuff at Palantir back in the day. You know, combined with AI, basically. I mean, just think about it. For sake of argument, we know Israel and America both have some of the best hackers. And so let's say you hacked in to the street cameras. Let's say you hacked into, you know, logistics in the country and who was sending what where, like what payments are happening, just all sorts of things you basically can view. Look at emails, look where everyone is. It's so much information. How would a person look at these millions of pieces of data and figure out what's going on? AI is really, really good at that. So Palantir and a system like that will create what's called the ontology, like, okay, like the concepts, the frameworks, here's the things we care about, here's how they can possibly relate to each other. And then you take that ontology, you take that structure of how to think about things, and you overlay like just insane amounts of information we're able to get in different ways through human intelligence, through signal intelligence, through hacking. And then all of a sudden it's able to optimize and say like, here's this base you didn't know about storing all these munitions. Here's this key part of the command center. Here's this thing over here, 300 miles outside of Tehran you never would have thought about. That's like a backup for the supply for this key part of their missile launchers, things like that. And all of a sudden, like, so when Israel in the first start of the war, like sends 200 planes as a surprise attack and they hit 500 targets in the first 20 minutes. Those targets were optimized between the two countries. And here's the things that we know we need to get rid of if we want to stop them from causing us more problems. So, I mean, it's just really, really powerful how smart what we could do is, you know, that we couldn't do before.
Interesting. What else should we talk about that's going on over there?
Over there?
Yeah.
You know, it's...
What are you worried about with the Strait of Hormuz? You worried about that at all?
And this, you know, this is a tough one. I am worried. Listen, I think this is one of those things that could take a few weeks and it could take a few months. And it's really, really hard to stop asymmetric attacks, right? Because, so the Iranian... And listen, this is one step removed. I don't have the exact information, but you have these mountains that they're firing out of, right? And it's amazing because as far as we could tell, So what'll happen is they have railroads underground that are way under the granite, and they have tons of missiles there. It's not about how many missiles they have, it's about how many launchers. And they have launchers, and a launcher will come out and it'll go out the railroad to an opening like a cave. It'll fire, and then it'll hurry back in, and we'll see where it fired from. And you could like destroy that, so they can never use that again for a long time without spending, you know, months digging out, because you just bomb the hell out of it. But then they just go out another cave and another cave. And these guys have apparently built like hundreds of these caves. It's actually impressive.
Wow.
Right? It's like they've been preparing for 20, 30 years for this. Yep. And so they have these mountains that are firing out of. And then you have all along the Strait of Hormuz, you can hide drones, right? You can hide all sorts of things in like hundreds of locations, that each time it's a new attack, a new location. So it could take a while to find all of it, right? Yep. It's not easy. And it's not, listen, it's especially bad for Europe, who turned off their energy economy. You want to talk about conspiracies, man? Like, Europe let Gazprom and Russia fund the green movement and turn off all their goddamn energy. And that's why they're in so much pain right now from this. Sheesh. You know? Yeah. That's a true conspiracy, by the way. 100%. We've found that it was a ton of Russia money that created the strength of the green parties all around Europe. And their main thing was turning off all their energy.
No shit.
100%. 100%. Like, Russia's not dumb. This is great for them, right? It's great for the Middle East, too. The green parties are useful idiots, man.
Does it bother you that we're low on munitions?
There are some munitions we're not low on, and there's some interceptor things that we could use a lot more of. Listen, I think America's going to be in a lot better position after experiencing this. So, in one of our companies called Chaos, has by far the best radar that they're monetizing, but the guy running it, who helped build Epirus as well, the EMP company, he's figured out how to do $5,000 interceptors now.
What?
He just proved it. He just proved it. Did a bunch of things last month. We're going to make thousands of them this year. We're going to make hopefully hundreds of thousands next year. I mean, America is going to be so strong coming out of this, because we're learning and we're iterating and we're getting better. And it definitely bothers me that we had to waste like millions of dollars per shot on some stupid interceptors. That was dumb, but that's because the primes are idiots. We're just going to fix it for them. Totally honestly, you know.
Right on.
Let's just make it better.
When you're trying to perform at a high level, you start optimizing everything, like your training, your nutrition, your mindset. For a long time, I wasn't really dialing in my sleep. If your sleep is off, everything feels harder the next day. That's what got my attention when I tried Beam's Dream Powder. I didn't want something to just knock me out. I wanted something that actually improved my sleep, and that's exactly what it does. Best of all, Beam is an American company that makes clean, science-backed products designed to help people perform at their best. Dream is our sleep formula, and it's loaded with ingredients your body actually needs to recover. Reishi, magnesium, L-theanine, apigenin, and melatonin, but dosed intelligently. My favorite flavor is cocoa, but they've got plenty of options. I mix it up and drink it about 30 minutes before bed for optimal results. Like I said, it tastes great, it's smooth, and it actually feels like part of my nightly routine now. And for a limited time, I've got my listeners an exclusive discount of up to 50%. Go to shopbeam.com/SRS and use my code SRS to get up to 50% off. This is the best discount Beam gives out, so tell your friends too. Even if they don't listen to the show, if they want to fix their sleep, they've got to try Beam. So remember to go to shopbeam.com/SRS. Use code SRS. With my code SRS, you can grab Dream for 50% off. Try it today.
Welcome to Hollywood versus reality.
They do it, right?
What does he do in the movies? Tell me if I'm doing this wrong, because I don't watch any of this. Little flick like that, right? Seems pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Gotta silence it. In another lifetime, I did gun reviews for a living. Proprietary magazines, supposedly the best engineering in the world. When that breaks, you're and now we're bringing them back. It does look pretty fucking cool. I gotta admit that.
What's China doing during all this?
They're in shock. They're in shock. And there's things released internally that said, you know what? It turns out America's a lot stronger than we realize, but they just have to want to use their strength. And their main objective with us is to make us not want to use our strength. And how do you make America not want to use our strength? There's a few things. One is you fund the far left. You fund the people who hate America. That group that's down in Cuba right now saying how great Cuba is, how bad America is, the one hotel that has light in the whole goddamn country, those people are funded by China. It's the wife of the guy who's been one of the main funders of everything, is the Nevel guy who's hiding out in Shanghai. So you have all sorts of Chinese money trying to make us hate ourselves. You have all sorts of, you know, I'm sure they love it when we fight with ourselves in two extreme ways on the right. I think it's totally legit to push back on the war. I respect that. I admire that. But there's people who are actually like pushing back on even America, like being a world leader and saying we have to share power with China, like Tucker said to that Chinese spy the other day, you know, a few weeks ago on the podcast. Like, there's a lot of guys
we should be sharing any power with China.
Exactly. I know you're not. He's lost it. I think he's lost it. He's too extreme against us. And so China wants, and you know what they have? They have what's called cognitive warfare. They're very smart about this. They have land, sea, air, cyber. Cognitive is a fifth branch. And they use all sorts of tactics. They capture whatever data they can. Same way we're capturing data to attack Iran and figure out targets, they're capturing data on everything and everyone going on in the country, building profiles and trying to figure out what do they do, what do they try, what do they push to make people not love America, to make people not want America to be free and have property rights. Because they know that is how, because it's the only way they're gonna get us at the end of the day.
If they've beefed up presence off the coast of Taiwan.
Oh, 100%. But they've continued to do that for a long time. That's right.
But it's more now since the Iran stuff kicked off, correct? Am I off on this?
I think even before the Iran stuff kicked off, I saw they were putting a bunch of ships and doing exercises all around the island. I shouldn't say I'm supposed to go visit briefly in a little bit. It gets a little scary flying on your plane over the Chinese warships. You're like Sean, maybe don't hear the episode until after I land.
Right on. Push it.
No, I'm just kidding.
But I mean, how are these chip fabs going in Arizona?
You know, I think some parts worked pretty well. I think there's some parts culturally where it's harder for some of the employees to ramp up in the U.S. for some of the types of tasks. You know?
I mean, the reason I'm asking, because that's the big fear for us, right?
Well, I think yeah. I mean, and, you know, Elon announced TerraFab, which is awesome. He's going to try to massively. You see the size of that building? It's like this, like, 3 or 4 miles long.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Elon announced this, like, massive project to do a massive fab for chips in Texas.
No shit. I didn't even fucking hear about
this. Yeah, it's the last. This is since we're recording the last few days. It'll be a couple weeks ago when it comes out. Yeah, no, it's a big project worth talking to people about. It's really cool. And they're going to try to do everything here at massive scale. Listen, I think these things take a while to get. I think Taiwan, which is actually China, right? It's the good China. I think Taiwan has a lot of advantages there from building it for decades. And I think they should be our ally and we should be working with them and we should be doing some things here. And then some things in their ecosystem. I mean, there's stuff that's done by hand by people who've been doing it for 20 years, whether it's in Taiwan or Vietnam or other places that you're not just going to like replace right away with robots, and you're not going to be able to pay people like to do a lot of that stuff here. Like, I think the high value stuff you could take, the low value stuff, I still think we can work with other countries. Like, that's it's just really, really hard to do it at scale without it. But totally, we got to bring more here.
I mean, does that worry you? That's what worries me the most. If they do take it, then what the fuck are we going to do in the end?
I'm the one who should be more worried about that because I'm building all these goddamn AI companies. What do you care? Listen. Obviously, it would slow things down, and obviously, it'd be bad for the world. A lot of the chips are things like if you have like a minivan for your kids, or like it's the chip opens and closes the door automatically. You'll have to do it by hand instead. It's just like there's like a lot of the chip stuff is like we can like swap things in and out. We could keep the key ones. You don't have to like a lot of the chips we use are convenient, but they're so cheap that we use a lot more than we need. And there'd be ways to figure it out and to keep things going and it wouldn't be as big of an economic impact right away, although it would obviously slow down the AI wave, which I don't want. Because that's something we should talk about. I think the AI wave is like way better than people realize. It's like the coolest thing happening in the world right now.
Man, let's do it. I just had Brett Hancock in here with Figure AI.
I love it.
Brought a robot in.
Yeah.
What the dude. It's a whole different world already.
There's so much happening, man.
Fuck is happening.
These kids, I was sitting with one of my old CEOs from 20 years ago. We built something together that we sold. And it was like building back then, we were selling, it's called OpenGov, and it's a great company. But it's like, I was saying, it was like being like in a boat and like rowing through the dirt, like with a paddle, because it was so freaking hard to build these things sometimes. It was so slow. And now there's like one of my AI CEOs was sitting next to us and he didn't hear my comment, but he like came over and he's like, Joe, we're not just going to double revenue this quarter, we're going to triple revenue this quarter. And it's like, holy crap, like this stuff is just like growing and changing and fixing things so fast. And you know, I think in terms of like why people should care, because I think it's a quick argument, like whatever, Joe, it's nice, you're gonna make a lot of money, who cares, you're already rich. Like why should like the 300 million Americans care? I think there's a few really great ones. I think the number one is healthcare. AI is gonna make healthcare like half the cost if we let it. This is really important. Like we can make healthcare so much better, so much cheaper. So much, you know, it's one of those things where it's gonna be a big battle, because right now every state has laws against it because of scope of practice, but I think we're gonna be able to prove some sandboxes. And if we can, that's going to be great. Like the first of all, that's just like makes America way wealthier, right? That we don't have our healthcare debt.
So. Man, I just saw, I think it's Mark Cuban's opening some pharmacy.
He's doing great work on the pharma side. Listen, Mark and I don't have the same politics, but I really admire his work on that, because that's a great, I've worked
on. This is going to take pharmaceuticals. You're going to be able to get them at cost, if I've read it correctly.
There's a ton of, so what happens in the old days is the pharma companies are so corrupt that they had laws, they had agreements where you couldn't even tell a patient about a generic option that was way cheaper. And this is like a PBM agreement. So in order to offer my drug over here, you're not even allowed to offer a payment. And so my friends and I went to the Senate and we fought really hard. And we won one battle and lost one battle. The battle we won is you made it so it's now legal for doctors to tell you about any generic, which is really important, by the way, because obviously, yeah. But the other one is they're still not able to share pricing. So they're still able to gag you on pricing. And it's really crazy. So they just hide pricing on all this stuff and don't let anyone share it. So there's no market for a lot of these things. And it's just, they just take advantage. And so Mark's getting around that by building his own thing in the middle, which is great. And Trump launched the site too, by the way, which is doing really well, which is saving people a ton of money. I don't know if you're—
Trump launched
a pharma site. There's like a pharma site you can go on, search Trump's pharma site, and it's a direct to consumer thing. And you can get all this stuff way cheaper right now. It's a big deal. He launched
a month ago.
Joe Jebbia, who's running design for the government, the Airbnb founder, he designed it all. It works great. So you can go on and do that. So the pharma stuff's, Mark Cuban stuff's great. I have a company called Blink Health. It's a cheaper PBM. Like a bunch of us are trying to solve the drug side, because that's a big thing to make cheaper. There's gonna be some drugs that always cost money, by the way, because you wanna have innovation, but you wanna make the generics and everything cheaper. But then the bigger side of this, man, is the health systems and is primary care. And like, there's not enough doctors for rural areas. You have to wait weeks sometimes. It's really expensive to go in. There's so many like standard things. There's hundreds of chronic conditions. You should just be able to like check on the freaking phone and be able to enter the things. And they've already checked you once, and they can, you know, Utah is doing a thing where AI can re-prescribe it once you've been prescribed, because it's safe if it's done correctly. And it has to be done safely in a deterministic way. But by the way, this is not like a, oh, AI might mess up type of situation. Like you can quantify it. You can test the system a million times. You can show that it's safer than doctors. And you should have to show that. It should be regulated in some form, right? There should be some way it's safe. But once you prove it's safe, keeping it out, that's just keeping prices high for the sake of the medical companies. That's bullshit.
What are you getting involved in?
Well, so we're building some things there, right? We're building a bunch of things in medical AI healthcare, and there's a bunch of great entrepreneurs doing that. That's like a big wave coming. A bunch of our friends are working on that. We got to make it legal. I'll tell you another crazy AI thing that's coming is have you followed Joby Aviation? It's them and Archer are the two eVTOL companies. So Joby, we backed 11 years ago to start, and they just got approved for 12 cities where they're going to be doing, 12 states where they're going to be doing takeoff and landing. So you basically can do me flying cars in 12 states is coming this next year.
Wow.
Which is
next
amazing.
Year?
It's coming in the next year. It's like proved now.
So can we buy these cars? Or
it's like
these,
Uber. It's like Uber. You're gonna be like, but you could use it. I gotta check if it's Tennessee. I think it might be, but it's Texas for sure, and Utah and a few other ones. I should have checked if it's Tennessee or not. But you can like have it come pick you up, you know, and take you downtown.
Holy
or something,
shit.
Which would be great. We gotta push Governor Lee. I bet it would be here. I'll check. But here's the thing. So these guys are like the best airplane guys, and they started with the insertion point at Joby at the flying cars. Right, they're like these winged things you could push with five rotors. They're building new airplanes too. And their best aerodynamicists in the world, when you had a new idea and you wanted to iterate, it used to take 3 months, 6 months, right? Because that's just how long it takes to do these things and do the work and program it and test it out. Thanks to AI, you can do all that in an afternoon now. So every afternoon, the best guys in the world are doing like 3 to 6 months of work. And so here's the thing that people don't realize about AI it's like we're living like multiple years in one in terms of progress. So we're taking like the 2020s and the 2030s and the 2040s, and we're condensing it into the next few years. Mm-hmm. And as I mean, the breakthroughs we have just on the airplane side, you know, airplanes were basically stuck for 60 years, right? No one believed anything would happen. You're going to start having like way more efficient, way better airplanes coming out in the next few years, thanks to AI. And it's going to be like this shocker where everyone's like, what the heck? These guys actually have hydrogen fuel cells working now. No one's ever got them working on planes. So hydrogen fuel cells, 3 times more efficient per weight, 2 times more efficient per conversion energy. So it's 6 times more efficient for flying as a fuel in the air, which is pretty amazing. And then you have the new shapes of airplanes, new designs of airplanes that we've thought about for years, never really been able to test. And the new designs are multiple times more efficient too. You do the multiplication, 6 times, even if it's only 3, it's 18 times. All of a sudden, air travel is super cheap, way better for everyone in the 2030s, right? So it's just like the world's in a really good place thanks to this AI. Like, this stuff really matters.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's really concerned, but I mean, it does. I mean, I've been concerned too. I've been worried, but
it's a lot of change.
I think we're going to be better off when we get on the other end of this. I think we already are better off.
I think it's already getting better, but it's going to be a huge leap the next 5 or 10 years. And listen, I think it's fair to be scared. I'll tell you, if I had to make the other argument, what am I most scared of? I think it's really good that Elon's doing XAI, because I think it shifts the Overton window, because you don't want just a bunch of woke companies in charge. Listen, I think there's people I respect in Anthropic, despite the fight they've had with the department and stuff. But there's some leftists there too. I think OpenAI kind of let themselves be conquered by the left. I think Elon, with what he's done, is kind of pushing everything else to be more rational, basically. And that, because it would be scary. Let's say you only had woke authoritarian AI things that are all of a sudden ruling against everything you and I believe. That'd be bad. Mm-hmm. So listen, I think there are things we got to watch for and be careful with, but this stuff is going to make so much wealth for everyone.
I mean, how do we, I think the big question in my mind is how do we regulate it, but remain competitive on the world stage?
I think there's certain
with China,
and your next governor here, she's kind of more on the regulation side, right? Blackburn, Senator Blackburn, she's one of the ones who kind of pushes that. And listen, I respect where she's coming from in certain areas. I think you want to protect children for sure. I think that's right. I think there could be certain rules on privacy we all agree on that we want to put in place. I think that's fair without breaking everything, right? You know, I think there's probably should be some rules about what kind of images you can create about people. You shouldn't just be able to like take a picture of one of our wives and do whatever they want with it in a video. That's not fair. I don't know. That's kind of messed up, right? It's like there's probably things like that that we should be protecting for civilized society. I think the best way to do this is to do it nationally. Congress is so dysfunctional on both sides right now. They're so dysfunctional. Like really what you do is you have moderates work together nationally, but some basic things in that we all agree on. And then just like let it be free and then come back and revisit if something else is broken. Like that would be my take, you know?
So you're pretty much on you don't want much regulation at all.
I want to protect kids and I want to protect creators. I think, Senator Blackburn's big on protecting creators. There's probably some rules there that's good, that's fair too. So I think there's basic things you could do for sure. And there's some compromise. But I think right now, the vast majority of regulations in this country, like there's 9 million words per state, Sean, of regulations, 9 million words per state. The vast majority is big companies stopping small companies and stopping new innovative companies from disrupting their business more efficiently. Like that is what regulation mostly does. Let's be honest, right? And here's a crazy thing. So one type of regulation is licenses. You need licenses to do things, right? So there's 1,000 different types of things you might need a license to do. Mm-hmm. There's only 50 of them that you need a license in every state to do. So right away from the start, 95% of the things that they force licenses for is clearly just protecting their guild because it's perfectly safe to do without a license in another state, right? So most of this stuff is guilds and big companies creating regulations to stop others. And healthcare, by the way, that's exactly what it is. Healthcare costs so much money because we put so many rules that you can't compete.
Yeah.
It's literally crazy amount of rules. You have to spend tens of millions of dollars just to get going, and you can't even do a new thing because they've blocked all the new stuff you could do. So like this, like our country, areas where we have high costs, where everyone suffers, where the middle class, where the working class suffers, is the areas where these guys have put in thousands and tens of thousands of rules. And by the way, that's like good for guys like me. If I just wanted to make tens of billions of dollars, I could put in all sorts of rules and I could afford the fucking lawyers to go follow those rules, right? Like guys in my situation who've built multiple big companies, like we could deal with regulation, we can afford it, we could figure it out, but it crushes any new thing trying to compete. And so it's bullshit. We shouldn't be crushing all these new things.
What about AGI?
So this is the, this is the, this is the, like, this is like the, did we create a new God question, right? Cause that's like obviously a fair question. And it's
like, didn't Jensen Wang just come out and say we're there?
There's AGI, there's ASI, which is like general intelligence versus like systemic intelligence. There's, I think a lot of people are defining when do we create something that has more intelligence than all of humanity combined and can do things that none of us combined can do. There's a question like, what's the level? I'm not even sure it's the right way to think about it because it's really more of a tool right now for lots of things. But sure, let's just you know, I think it's a fair question. Like, do at some point you create something that has like so much more intelligence that's just so far ahead of you all that somehow it takes over? And that, listen, I think right now I'm much more afraid of what people are going to do with AI. I'm not saying you couldn't somehow create something that would do that. I think you have to be smart. I think that's more of like a 10, 20 year from now question. Okay. But it's definitely a question to watch for. And I think as you're building AI, one of the things it does as a tool is helps us analyze and understand what's coming next. And we have to have, it's actually really good. There's lots of these companies because we all need to be using these in different ways to understand and analyze and make sure we're aware of what we're building. It's like, you know, it's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you guys are getting in, well, Palantir, that's getting into corruption, waste, fraud, all that kind of shit, right?
I mean, this is a core of the DNA since we started Palantir. You saw at PayPal back in the day before Palantir existed, the Chinese and Russian mafia were stealing all our money, right? That was the big thing. And if you hear Elon talk about fraud, he knows it because he was part of that battle. He was part of that battle to stop that. And he said, like, you know, whoever squeals the loudest, that's because you're turning off their fraud. Like, I remember Peter was at chess club with some Russian guy who was pissed and who was screaming, yelling, and who was complaining. And it's because Peter was like turning off all of his fraud at work, right? Cause he was tied to these mafia guys. So it's like, yes, yeah, so this is like core, like Palantir, when it was first built, it came out of that experience of understanding how to do data investigations based on fraud. And yeah, Palantir is working right now with the SBA, with Kelly Loeffler, Administrator Loeffler is doing an amazing job there. Tons of stuff. And HUD, I mean, HUD is just like, level one ground level for fraud, right? Just like paying off NGOs for get out the vote purposes, paying off people in the community, basically in the inner cities. It's just a lot of nonsense that you're finding. And the question
is shit tons of fraud. I mean, I had Nick Shirley come on and talk about all the fraud going on.
I think he's done a great job exposing a lot of stuff.
You know, with the Somalis, the
I mean, these tribes are so good.
Centers.
The Leering centers. I love it. These tribes are so good at, cause they coordinate. Cause like you couldn't get, unfortunately, in Europe, you get like a tribe of these, you know, Islamists from wherever, like 15 of them to go rape the teacher together and not tell anyone. Like if you ask 15 of my cousins to go rape a teacher, they'd all like punch you in the face. And like, there's no way they'd all go do something like that. But these tribes from these places are sick. And we've brought them into this country. There's a lot of broken tribes here, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of fraud tied. There's tons of fraud tied to subcultures around LA that we're finding. It's really unfortunate. We got to turn all this stuff off.
So, I mean, my question, I mean, I got, you guys are going over, we keep saying you guys, Palantir, COVID era PPP fraud. Palantir is now helping Small Business Administration investigate fraud.
Tons of it.
You mentioned the HUD, minority contracting abuse. Biden tripled the size of the program. Most contracts were no bid awarded. So anyways, I mean, this kind of sounds, didn't we kind of do this with DOGE and it didn't?
Well, Doge turned off $160 billion of stuff. It's not nothing. That's pretty good stuff.
No. I'm not saying it's not nothing. I'm saying
there's probably a lot more.
Wanted it a lot to go.
There's a lot more to find.
The full distance.
Yeah.
But there was so much fucking pushback.
Yeah. And it was like complicated. I think when Doge first started, I was there at Mar-a-Lago briefly and with Elon and Vivek and others, and they were interviewing people to become the secretaries, right? Because Trump had him helping with the transition. And so Doge right from the start was kind of like tied to the boss and tied to the president. And I think there had to be a cultural change with how it worked with the agencies and worked with the leadership in ways they'd be okay with it. But a lot of the best people did go into these agencies and keep working. It's not like it went away fully, right? All the cultures there are still in a lot of these places and going. And I love that, listen, the president's put the vice president in charge of this, right? And I saw him recently. He says this is a big objective of his. He's working hard on it. And a lot of the grift that comes from fraud, Sean, is how the Democratic Party funds its allies. This is just the truth. This is how the Democratic Party funds its friends and allies. It's very good at it, right? We caught huge amounts of money going to these things that go to get out the vote for the left. There's hundreds of nonprofits in New York State recently came out that are funding Get Out the Vote. They're funding candidates, right? And so these people will have political power. They'll get money for their NGOs. They'll get money for their businesses with Medicaid or whatever else. And they'll give it right back. It's like political largesse. They give it right back to people benefiting them, and they get more. And it's huge amounts of money. So this is why, unfortunately, a lot of the left is not on our team for getting rid of fraud, because it's funding so many of the people who vote for them and who support them. And this is a huge issue for us to go after much harder. We got to turn it off.
Sheesh. I mean, do you think this, has this started?
Oh yeah. Listen, they're finding a bunch of stuff with Administrator Loeffler and the SBA. They just announced a bunch of stuff in HUD a few weeks ago that they're finding. There's just all this stuff, and we're turning it off. And you said the right thing that's also really getting me really annoyed is we should be doing more prosecutions. We should be putting more people in jail, because you're finding stuff. It's very clearly fraud, and you're turning it off, and we are not prosecuting. And I think the people running the DOJ are not nearly as competent as they need to be. I'll just put it out there.
How the fuck is this going to change?
We got to get more competent people whose job is to actually initiate and put people in jail for breaking the law.
How do we do that?
You put out the word to hire really competent lawyers. I don't know. Like, I've built orgs. You've built orgs. It's like, I mean,
I know what I would do, but nobody's doing it.
What'd you do?
I would fucking fire everybody and bring in
You'd place some new leadership. That seems reasonable to me at this point. Listen, by the way, some leadership's really good in some of these places, and they are working well with us. And like, Loeffler's doing great work. Like, there's people in the Department of War doing, I think, great work. Like, whether or not you agree with the war, these are competent people, right? And so there's like places where we have very competent leaders that President Trump's brought in, and there's places where, for whatever reason, I can't tell, they're not getting it done. So let's fix it.
Yeah. Well, I hope it sticks. I really hope that sticks up.
We got to turn this stuff off. We got to prosecute it. We got to make it sure it can't happen again. It drives me crazy, Sean, because we have, first of all, like, the government shouldn't be able to give hundreds of billions to NGOs. Like, what the heck, right? That's wrong. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, if you go to the Senate and try to get the votes for that, you need 60 votes. You can't get it because the Democrats won't vote against funding this stuff. You know what I think we should do here to fix that?
What?
We should use the NGOs for our objectives at scale. We should say, okay, we're going to be funding NGOs to help free speech in Europe. We're going to be funding NGOs to root out the communists from all the universities around the country. We're going to be funding NGOs to go do anti-voter fraud in the cities. We're going to be funding NGOs to look at any other NGOs to make sure they're not doing anything political. Like, these are all things we could do, and the left would hate it. And you know what? We might get the votes to turn off NGO funding if we actually use them for something on our team. I don't know. Just to throw it out there, you know, like, why not be a little more aggressive? We're in the generation that wants to fight. These old Republicans, man, they don't know how to fight.
Yeah, I think we've all figured that out.
We all figured it out. Like, come on, guys. Like, we need to actually fight and win. Like, because there's stuff we're totally aligned on here, but we got to be fighting. Why don't we have fighters? It's like there's this genteel class of, like, patricians presiding over some kind of decline. I don't get it. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Let's fix it.
So what would we do? Would we start new NGOs? Or repurpose?
I'm in favor of just turning it all off. But because we can't turn it all off, I would probably start new ones to bid for the money and use it for things on our side while we're in power. But I'd want to design them in a way where they're going to wind down no matter what, because you don't want to create a whole new class of leeches, right? That's always the problem.
Yeah.
Because I'm not for having tons of leeches on our side like they have on their side. They have so many leeches. Just make money off this nonsense. There's like whole agencies that we turned off that were basically doing nothing and just other than fraud and corruption. And so we don't want that. Like, I don't want, that's not our side, but we should be fighting back, and we should be doing whatever we can to get them to be forced to turn these off. That's my view.
It does make sense. What's going on in Ukraine, Russia these days?
You know, I really hope that this war has a good impact there. Like, if we're honest, like, the three militaries that are probably the best in the world right now, just from all their practice recently, is probably U.S., Israel, and Ukraine. Obviously, U.S. is the very best, but Israel and Ukraine have both gotten so much better because they've been forced to fight. I've been very impressed with the Ukrainians. There's some really, really clever innovation that they've created by necessity to save themselves. I mean, it's amazing stuff they're doing.
Well, give me some examples.
Like,
stuff that's impressing you over there.
Like, figuring out, like, there's this company, Sign Engineering, that we're involved with, just like doing all of the maps of the battlefield for the drones and how to control them and how to counter them and knowing what's going on and knowing how to hide, knowing how to attack. There's all sorts of new things. There's electronic warfare that they and others are doing to create like bubbles the enemy can't see and then sneak through, or to turn their stuff off during an attack into different ways, jamming them in different ways, creating shadows of things that don't actually exist. You know, there's all sorts of ways they're producing lots of small things at scale that they can use to kind of kind of halt the enemy's advance and harass them in ways that no one's ever done before. There's literally millions on both sides of these drones back and forth. Mm-hmm. And there's controls where one person, like I've played video games where you control a bunch of troops. It's very different in the real world, controlling hundreds of these things at once and getting really freaking good at it with AI plus the person. It's kind of cool. It's terrifying, but it's kind of cool, you know? But listen, I think we're turning off all the Shahid production right now. Another benefit of the Iranian thing is hopefully that turns off a lot of more stuff to Russia. Russia's already, by all accounts, from everything I've heard, they're in huge budget troubles. They're actually unwilling to project the next year of budget in Russia as of the last kind of 4 months.
No shit.
Because they can't do it at this rate. So they have to just like do a month-to-month planning. And so they're under a lot of pressure right now. So I think turning off the Iranian stuff, I think the budget pressure they're under, hopefully we come to a good resolution in both. I mean, I think this is a risky thing, but hopefully Trump looks really freaking good 6 months from now. And both of those things are in the right place. I think there's a good chance of that. I hope so.
Right on. Joe, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get into some of the new companies that HTC is invested in.
Love it.
We track our sleep, fine-tune our macros, and try every biohack under the sun. But the truth is, your peak performance starts at the cellular level. Armora colostrum is nature's original superfood. Colostrum is packed with over 400 bioactive nutrients that fortify gut health, strengthen immune health, fuel performance, and more. Whether you're training for a race, working to balance your health, or simply striving to feel your best, Armora helps you operate at your highest level because your body deserves the same level of optimization as the rest of your life. For me, Armora has become a staple in my daily routine, and I'm impressed by the results. So we've worked out a special offer for my audience. Receive 30% off your first subscription order. Go to armora.com/SRS or enter SRS to get 30% off your first subscription order. That's armra.com/SRS.
Hi, I'm Sarah Adams, the host of Vigilance Elite's The Watch Floor, where we highlight what matters. It became a permissive state. Explain to you why it matters, and then aim to leave you feeling better informed than you were before you hit play. Terrorists, hostile intelligence agencies, organized crime, not everything is urgent. But this show will focus on what is need to know, not just what is nice to know.
All right, Joe, we're back from the break. We were talking about AGI and ASI. I've not even heard of ASI, but I just want to dive in a little bit more on what that means. Can you explain that to me? Like,
I think there's a lot of different levels you can define of what constitutes the computers being way, way ahead of us. And I think there's like artificial systemic intelligence. There's general intelligence is lower systemic. It's like, and like one of the questions is like, at what point, like, do people not even help the AI improve itself? Which is kind of a scary question, right? So it's, if you want to compare, if chess is the right analogy, if you go back to chess, it used to be that like people were better than the machines, but the machine could help you with tactics, right? So there's two types of chess. There's a tactics, which is like the next 3, 5, 10 moves. The computers are really good at that, even from 1960s, because you can see the next 10 moves. But people will be much better knowing what's happening way farther ahead, right? Position placers. So there's things the human mind's better at, and there's things the computer is better at. And as the computer got better at chess, it got to the point where the best computer was better than the best person. But for a long time, if you combined a computer and a person, it still made it a lot better because there were still some things that people were better at, right? So the people were so much better at position play that there would be a chimera, right? Combined, it was better. And then it got to a point where the computer is so freaking good, it doesn't even get any better if you had a person. It doesn't need to help anymore. It's so far ahead.
Damn.
And that's where it is obviously today for a long time at this point. And so the question is, like with coding right now, for a long time, only people did it. And now we're just started to use the computer to do a little bit of things. And the computer's gotten so much better in the last couple years that now you're using a computer for a lot. Like you're not even writing most code anymore. You have like 6 agents or 10 agents if you're really good. Each of them like coding for you and you're telling it what to do and you're coming back and testing it and telling it to build its own tests. But there's still like a person involved coordinating all of this stuff, right? Mm-hmm. The question at what point does like the coding thing be the thing that coordinates itself, right? At some high level. And at what point, even higher level than that, is the whole company basically being coordinated, you know, for all the tech side by a computer? And at what point, you know, does all the work on whatever important project just get iterated on by a computer instead, which is kind of a scary proposition, right? I don't love this. Like, at what point are they just replacing years of my job? And, you know, it's silly that obviously computers don't want to listen to each other, but it's kind of creepy, right? Like, they go higher and higher and higher up the conceptual abstract stack. And so I think there's different ways of like saying how you measure it, but like, you know, a lot of my smartest friends who run the AI labs, still, when I talk to them the last few months, it's like, oh yeah, it won't be till the mid 2030s that like we're not having people actually help on some of these things. But what does that even mean at that point? You know, so at what point is scientific discovery pushed ahead by the computers? I think we're just starting to get what look like scientific breakthroughs from computers, like, but if they work really closely with people, like, at what point is there a point where the breakthroughs are happening with the people not even involved?
Holy shit!
Right, and none of us know the answer. I'd say, like, when you talk to the smartest guys, like Dario, who runs Anthropic, like as of a few months ago, he thought that like the next few years of this really fast advancement is kind of locked in. Like, we used to have something called Moore's Law with chips, right, where the chips get better, double every year and a half, and so this is like a law to predict how the chips kept getting faster and faster. And the guys running the chips companies, Intel, all the other ones, they'd have all sorts of new tactics and new technologies they're building that would like let you make it twice as small, twice as fast over the next couple of years. And they kind of always be able to see ahead, maybe 2 years, maybe 3 years. And it's always like, wow, how are you gonna make it smaller? Like, well, we have to solve this and this and this problem. And they keep going. And they did it for a very long time. And so what, similarly with Dario, with this advanced pace where it keeps getting better with new data, new techniques, new tactics, he could see like very confidently the next couple of years and probably a third year of how it keeps getting better, which is a pretty amazing, because the pace right now is like doubling every few months, right? In terms of what the agents, it's crazy. So he could see that going on for at least another couple of years. And if he's right, that's going to be very, very impressive in 3 years, but it's still not, it would still probably take until sometime in the next, you know, decade or two to do some of these other things, replacing people. The question is it going to keep getting better or not? And it's a fascinating situation.
It's looking likely.
You know, I tend to think the universe works in asymptotes and not in exponentials. Like, the idea of a singularity, Sean, is that the thing like starts getting better and better, and then it improves itself faster and faster, and then it just infinitely shoots upward, and like the whole, everything changes, and you basically have a God that you've created. Like, that's like a secular person's, you know, religious view from the tech world, that we're just going to change everything with a singularity. And I think you have these explosions that like hit natural limits and then go over. And so my view for everything, every other phenomenon I've ever studied, is that these things don't just go exponential forever. There's limits to the universe and how these things work. So maybe it doesn't go exponential. I don't know. I think it probably doesn't, but some people think it probably does. That's a really big question for us for 10, 20 years from now.
Right on. Let's talk about some of these companies that AIDVC is investing
in. Yeah, what do you want to hear about?
I picked a handful here. First one I want to talk about is Overland AI.
I love it.
I've been kind of following that company for a couple of weeks. I just saw it, and then when I was getting ready for the interview today, I was like, oh, shit.
Byron is an impressive man. He's a professor out West, and he's won the National DARPA contest a bunch of times of how you navigate over kind of random terrain, right? So this is very different than a self-driving car. The problem Elon and Google and those guys are solving is driving on roads with people and bikes. And it's a hard problem, right? There's a really hard problem, obviously. The problem he's solving is like over kind of like random 3D terrain, like in a forest. Like, if you're going to launch an attack, or if you're going to defend, if someone had to drive something out back over, you know, out behind here where you're shooting, mm-hmm. it's like, that's a different sort of self-driving problem. You need LiDAR for sure, because you're like measuring ahead where it dips down. You might have ditches you get stuck in, you might have rivers you're going around, mountains you're climbing over. So he's the best in the world at that. And his vehicles can go without humans interfering for days. And this is obviously very, very useful for our military to be able to go over complex terrain. And originally he was powering all the other primes and all the other vehicles out there, but now he's building a bunch of his own.
Right on. What do these vehicles look like?
He's doing both. Actually, it's interesting. I think the main one that we're going to make a lot of are smaller, rugged, all-terrain vehicles. They can have a bunch of different kind of sensors and weapons on them, but they're not for carrying people in this particular case. They're much, much, much cheaper. So a tank is very useful for certain things, but these guys, you probably could have several hundred of them for the cost of a fully equipped tank.
No shit.
With different sensors, with different weapons, coordinating. I'd be a hell of a lot more scared if I was 100 miles away and there were 300 of these smart things coming at me than just a single tank. So there's two different types of weapons.
So is this similar to Saronic?
It is kind of analogous in the sense that you have autonomous, Saronic's building at scale autonomous, you know, warships. And Saronic's first product was a 25-footer. Saronic last year also built, as you know, the fastest built big ships since World War II. So Saronic is now building at scale 180-footers, 150-footers, 100-footers, which is pretty awesome, right?
Fuck yeah, man.
I mean, a 180-foot autonomous boat can be more powerful than a 400-foot destroyer if it's autonomous, because the destroyer has a freaking hotel on it. Mm-hmm. But it's 180-foot's all weapons. So you actually have more weapons on the 180-footer than the destroyer.
Damn.
Which is pretty cool, right? Yeah. And by the way, in a battle, what's a destroyer do in a battle? It runs. It has to run away. It's 500 lives. It's going to get wiped out. These guys don't have to run away. They can freaking charge, right? And you have a lot more of them for the same cost. So Saronic, what they're doing makes sense. But yeah, it's similar where over the land, you're also going to want a lot of these things that are autonomous, that are much cheaper at scale, go into a territory. If we ever have to fight in a jungle, ever have to fight in Ukraine, ever have to fight anywhere on the ground, you're going to want this stuff.
Has Saronic deployed anywhere yet?
Saronic has, but it's not. It's because the war is going on. We're not able to talk about any of that right now, unfortunately.
Rob, damn it. I can't wait till we can.
Yeah, you gotta get Dino back. He's a big fan of yours. He's a CL also, of course.
Yeah, we had him on.
Yeah, he loved it.
But how about TAP, training all
people? Yeah, that's really cool. Jason Spires. He's a really good guy. You know, actually, he had an interesting background. He wouldn't mind me saying, because he overcame this thing where he grew up really poor and he was dealing marijuana, and they threw him in jail for a long time for being good at it. And he got out of prison in his 20s, and he went to Stanford, and then he went to Palantir for a little bit. And I ended up meeting up with him, and we helped him as he got this thing going. And just, you kind of root for guys like that who had a tough upbringing and were, you know, he didn't hurt anyone. He was just really good at selling this stuff. So like, they locked him up. And but like, he's someone I really admire, and he obviously turned his life fully around, and he's a great entrepreneur. And this is one of the most important areas for our country right now. It's called training all people. Is how do you get people to get great jobs and get them exposed to like kind of more higher end vocational training, working with machines that cost millions of dollars. Not, you know, it's too expensive to build a school to train someone on a, you know, semiconductor machine that they might have to work with that costs tons of money. He's built instead with his co-founder some amazing VR technology. So the students are actually partnered with a bunch of these companies where they'll train people in VR, make sure they can get to the point where they're actually pretty proficient and learn a bunch of different stuff. And then they'll have trainers who've done this forever in their company, you know, helping them do it at scale. And then once they're good enough, they get to train on the real stuff. And so it makes it so much more affordable to take huge numbers of Americans and get them ready for high paying jobs. And he's helping, you know, tens of thousands of people. Hopefully he'll be helping hundreds of thousands of people soon.
Right on, man. Right
yeah,
on.
It's a good thing to do.
About Esper, that caught my attention. Cloud,
I love it.
Cloud policy making software.
I love it. Malka is an impressive founder. Her parents were from Afghanistan, actually. She grew up here. Very pro-liberty lady. I think you can be American from any background if you love liberty and you love our country and love our values. And she and my wife became friends, actually, because they're both interested in policy, and they're both obsessed with the regulatory state being really broken and really hurting a lot of things in America. It's a kind of a core conservative value of how you make government less stupid. And so what she realized when she started this company is that technology and AI can actually make the regulatory state work a hell of a lot better. So it's a nonpartisan thing, right? You just like no one wants government to be dumb, because it's pretty dumb sometimes. And so if you're going to make, for example, if you're going to make a regulation, what's the process to make it, to check other states, to learn what's going on, to see what the code is? What's the process to review it? What's the process to see how it's working? What's the process so people in the field know what the regulations are so they can intelligently kind of use them and not just harass people unnecessarily? So there's a lot of interesting tech to make all that transparent. And she has a bunch of states using it to basically like make the regulations smarter, to get rid of bad regulations and just run that process. It's a profitable company, growing really well, working both blue states and red states, and just making government less stupid. So I love stuff like that.
Damn, that's awesome. And then the other one that really caught my attention was Bedrock.
Yeah, Bedrock Robotics. This is cool. Boris, He's also a great lover of liberty. Not to get all these people in trouble with their other people, but he is. His father was like a genius from the Soviet Union who fled here, basically, like one of those like physicists, I think.
Oh shit!
And Boris was a great entrepreneur. I met him through a mentor of mine a long time ago. He's working on stuff in AI, and he ended up selling a company to Google, and he helped run part of their Waymo division. You know, Waymo is the self-driving cars.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are a bunch of really, really talented guys. I mean, it's amazing what Waymo's done. I'm rooting for Elon against Waymo with Tesla, but they're obviously both comes from like great DNA. And his new company, it's autonomous construction, autonomous excavation. And this is really, really cool because, first of all, 25% of all the costs right now to build something in the US in construction is tied to excavation. And second of all, there's tons of things. Like there's quarries, there's 6,000 quarries where you can never basically get enough stuff out of them cheaply enough. Everything's really expensive because you have to hire tons of people right away. Then you have to fire them all because you can't use it for a while. And you can never get enough people for the right jobs. And it's sloppy and it's like messy and a lot of it's boring. And so he actually it's working. I mean, he's raised a few hundred million more dollars recently since we invested from all sorts of top investors. And they're partnered. They're using Caterpillar machines. People love it, and they're actually deployed, and it's working. They're doing it in Texas, doing it in Alabama. Here's the funny thing: the tech, of course, unfortunately, the AI people are in California, but when they do stuff in the real world, they always come to the center of the country where the states are run well.
Yeah. I mean, dude, that's gonna change a lot.
Yeah,
I mean, so because it's not just excavators, right? It's construction.
It's going to be all sorts of construction stuff. You started with excavators. That's a really hard problem with multiple dimensions. Like you're digging on a hill and you have mm-hmm. different kind of dirt coming up. And it's really interesting. You know, one of the crazy things is they train on like tons and tons of data, which is part of their advantage is they partner now with lots of different companies getting all the data. And the computer learns what to do. And so one of the things it learned how to do is when it's done digging and it's in it waiting, it'll go around and use the scooper to clean things up nearby and like smooth things out and like make everything nice. Because it learned it from the guys doing it. Isn't that crazy?
That's wild. I mean, I feel like shit's going to get done at least three times. I mean, if typical 8 hours construction shift.
Well, you
operate that machinery.
Think about it. Like
we have 24 hours a day. That's three times faster.
I'm always jealous. Weekends. I'm always jealous of Japan because like they'll have their roads. Just like the guys will come at night because they respect their other people so much in their society. And they don't have the weird unions that break things. So they just like work really hard at night, well paid and get it done fast. Right. So you can be on the road again. Now you could do it again without having to keep the union guy up at night. You know?
Damn, man.
No, but and by the way, here's the thing. This is like a classic Jevons paradox thing, which is really important for economics because a lot of people might see this and their first instinct might be, well, F you, you're just getting rid of people's jobs, right? That might be the thing they think. And here's what it is. It's that when something goes down in cost, you can have demand for a lot more of it, right? So the original Jevons paradox, and it's important people understand, this is a key economics concept, is they figured out how to make coal plants twice as efficient in the 19th century. This is a big deal because coal was like the big energy. And so if you own a bunch of coal mines, a lot of people did, that was a big thing back then, and coal plants are twice as efficient, all of a sudden everyone's like, oh my God, they're not going to need our coal anymore. And you know what happened instead is demand for coal went way up because all of a sudden, because energy was so much cheaper, it was now in much more in demand and there's much more uses of it. And it's the same thing here. If you can build buildings in America for much cheaper, suddenly a manufacturing project that you were forced to do in Mexico or forced to do in the Philippines or Vietnam or wherever else the hell the number is said to do it, suddenly it makes a lot more sense to do it here because you're building it for much cheaper. And so suddenly you're cut. So the amount of economic activity you're going to create if we can make these things cheaper, it's going to go so up. There's going to be so much more stuff that just right now there's all this stuff, Sean, that I really want to do here as a patriot. And I do. I produce a lot of things here. I build things with the ships and everything else. But there's a lot of stuff that doesn't pencil. Like, Joe, I'm sorry. It doesn't pencil. And you can't just be a crazy person. It has to pencil, right? But this makes a lot of stuff going to pencil a hell of a lot better the next few years. So it's going to lead to a massive boom in economic activity here. It's a very good thing for America.
Damn, man. I mean, what do these machines look like? Are they just repurposing?
They're repurposing Caterpillar machines for now. Caterpillar, by the way, is crushing it the last few years. You can imagine because of all the construction and data centers and demand for their machines around the world. So they're a very profitable, massive company, and they love this. They know they can't build it themselves. And so they're working really well and partnering and figuring out, and we're equipping their machines. And you know who else is going to be going into this sector as well is our friend Travis just announced it. Have you followed that at all, Travis Kalanick?
No.
So he's the one who built Uber, right? Very famously, amazing entrepreneur, super hardcore guy in terms of a builder. And his latest company, he's renaming Adams, and he's going into the world of atoms. You can go, he did a whole manifesto online. So Bedrock's my favorite big company exists in this space, but in other parts of the space like mining, et cetera, Travis wants to figure out how to make the world of atoms work with AI. So this is going to be a hopefully a huge growth area for everyone in the next several years.
Man, that is wild.
Yeah.
What are you excited about?
You know, America is back, man. Like I said, I think our country went through something very weird for 50 years. Like all of a sudden we had way too many lawyers from the early 70s. We had this fiat currency. We got rid of the gold standard. We had all this bureaucracy sprout up. I mean, it was almost like the Soviet Union somehow had infiltrated us. I don't know. Something really bad happened where our culture went off the rails. Workers weren't paid as much. Finance got to be too big relative to workers. I think that's a major problem. I still think we got to fix that. And you know, there's all these things that were broken for 50 years. And suddenly, and the airplanes didn't get better. Healthcare got more expensive. Everything got broken. Suddenly, it's all reversed. Suddenly, healthcare is going to get cheaper. Airplanes are going to get better and faster. Like, government's going to get less stupid with this AI stuff. All this manufacturing is coming back. All of a sudden, we're building ships again with Dino. Like, China builds 230 times the amount of ships as we can. We're going to 100x it in America the next several years. Like, all this stuff. Like, he'll announce it himself, but he just raised billions more. But there's all this stuff that's getting funded, all the stuff that's working, all the stuff that's growing. Like, America is going to be by far number one again. And we just got to make sure we don't rip ourselves apart. We don't let the left get in charge because they'll break it.
I love to hear that. I got a hot question for you.
All right.
You ready? Joe, drone swarms just flew over Barksdale Air Force Base for a week straight. This is where we keep nuclear B-52s.
Oh, yeah.
They resisted jamming. They were custom built, and the military couldn't stop them. Your company, Epirus, literally builds the weapons designed to solve this problem. So what's actually going on here? Is this a real foreign adversary probing our nuclear infrastructure, or is there any chance this is a psyop, a distraction from what's happening with Iran and everything else right now?
You know, it's a great question, and I almost texted my friends in the Pentagon to ask them about this because I was wondering it too. I probably should, huh? Although the reason they might not tell me is that they know I'd probably tell everyone when I talk to you. So I don't have inside information. I wish I did. Your listener is 100% right. Epirus could shoot these things down. I actually just posted something right before I went on the show a couple hours ago. Epirus has a new autonomous thing where the truck drives autonomously, opens up and fires autonomously at the drones. You put a couple of these.
Oh shit!
You put a couple of these at the base. They take the drones down right away. Because say anti-jamming is one thing. Epirus is not just jamming. Epirus is frying the circuits. Epirus is literally applying like an insane amount of energy, all smushed into a 10,000th of a second, and using AI and everything to get the power to hit the gallium nitride all at once. And the burst just like is a cone of energy. It fries these things. So yes, Epirus 100% could fry these and turn them off. And you know, so if we really need to, maybe they're going to adopt it. So let's see. I think that's the obvious solution.
Andy Lowry's coming here on Monday, I think.
He is.
Yeah.
All right.
He's bringing one.
Oh, good. Really?
He's all bringing right. one. We're going to get a good walk man. Around.
Let's get him on.
We'll fry the neighbors.
Andy's the CEO of Epirus. Don't fry the neighbors. You'll get us in trouble.
The neighbors' cars.
Yeah, the problem is once you fry some of these things, you can't turn them back on. They wouldn't be very happy with you.
There's a follow-up. If China takes Taiwan tomorrow and controls TSMC and those chip factories, can we even continue to build drones and AI weapon systems?
So first of all—
That's kind of what I was alluding to earlier about— You know, if they do take Taiwan, what does that mean? And you were talking about repurposing chips.
Yeah, so first of all, TSMC is part of like a massive ecosystem. So a lot of the design, a lot of the work, a lot of other things happen in America, happen around the world, happen in the ASML in Europe. Like you couldn't just like take TSMC and just like own it for yourself. Like it would stop working because you'd stop sending the designs, you'd stop doing the work, you'd stop iterating, right?
Okay, I thought it was all centralized.
No, it's actually really interesting. I think America actually does capture more of the profits from the chip ecosystem than Taiwan does. This is what people miss. Like they definitely capture more of the revenue because of like the cost, but if you look at the actual profits, we're still capturing more than they are because we do so much of the work. It's a very distributed industry where a lot of that's happening at Lam Research and Applied Materials and all these companies that maybe you haven't heard of that are in the Silicon Valley that are part of the US still. And so they couldn't just take it all away. Now that said, they could massively slow down everything in global chip production. They could definitely cut off all the newest stuff. It would take a long time to redo it, which is why we're trying to obviously build what we can here. But listen, it would set back AI by 5 or 10 years. Would it stop us from building drones? No. Like we have another separate problem right now, which is that we don't do enough rare earth refining, which is something the Department of War has done a really good job trying to change. There's been at least a couple companies they're putting a lot of money into to, you know, they're going to mine rare earths, they're going to refine rare earths, and you need those things to be able to build the magnets and the drones motors. Like most of the Ukrainian drones on both sides involve China and their supply chain, which is not good for us. That's like, it's a shame right now. That's what, how it works. So we got to fix that, but that's not necessarily just a TSMC problem. That's a separate problem we got to fix that we're working on.
How, I mean, you were talking about Elon, you know, getting, diving into this.
TerraFab, yeah.
How, I mean.
You got to bring someone on who knows more about it because it's a new thing. Yeah.
I'm just curious, what is the timeline? Is there one?
I have nothing but respect for Elon as the number one builder in the world. I think when you're a great entrepreneur, at least if I speak for others as well and for my own things where I've built five or six pretty big companies, like I think you almost have to trick yourself, at least for me, into thinking it's going to be faster than it is, because otherwise you can't get yourself to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, 'cause when you start one of these companies, at least in my experience, maybe I'm just slower, but they always take longer. They're always harder. I think Elon has done just most amazing things, but he's also made predictions where things take longer. And that's, I think that's just normal for a great entrepreneur. So I think it's just really hard to know how long things are going to take. And I think whatever someone guesses is a great entrepreneur, you could sometimes maybe add a few more years. And so I think this thing takes a while. That said, they're going really fast. They have the best people in the world, and it's really good for America that they're doing it. So I'm rooting for them.
Is that in Austin too?
Yeah, it actually is.
Man, that is wild, man. That place
it's so cool. We're just finishing our STEM building for a new university right next to SpaceX and Boring Company right there next to all this stuff. We're going to have a 30 acres and have this awesome building. We're going to be doing, they're actually helping us. We're going to be doing like robotics and electrical engineering and all sorts of stuff there. So it's a really fun area right now.
Damn, that's cool,
University
man.
Of Austin, we're crushing it.
Yeah. That's cool. What are you guys doing over there? University of Austin. You know, we talked about it last time you were here. But
yeah, it's great. The third class is joining right now. This is about Peter Thiel has already hired away a few of our people from the first two classes, and a bunch of them put online. You can go look. They're doing all sorts of cool companies, all sorts of cool internships with Boring Company and Palantir and all sorts of different groups we partner with. Listen, these are amazing young people. To have a really top score, Sean, and then to turn down an Ivy League or another top school and go to a new university, you have to be an entrepreneur. You have to have an opinion, you know, you have to want to be part of like the, you know, it's, frankly, it's the counter elite, it's the new elite. It's the people who don't want to be part of the old kind of broken Harvard Yale kind of loser mess, like CFR, you know, guys who predict everything wrong about what's going to happen in the Middle East and are just like part of the old kind of corrupt old guard. Like they want to be part of the builders. They want to be part of the actual competent people who think for themselves and don't just echo what you're supposed to say. I think it's going really well.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Well, Joe. It's awesome catching up, man.
It's great to see you.
Love what you're doing. No matter where you're watching The Sean Ryan Show from, if you get anything out of this at all, anything, please like, comment, and subscribe. And most importantly, share this everywhere you possibly can. And if you're feeling extra generous, head to Apple Podcasts and Spotify and leave us a review.